This is going to be one of the most fascinating stories I think I have heard so far this year. It's really, really intriguing. Did you know that from the 1920s to the 1960s, there was a series of anthropological expeditions across Australia to collect hair from Aboriginal people? 6,000 samples, would you believe it? Including those from the Murchison, the Gascoyne, the Pilbara and the Kimberley were kept. And now the University of Adelaide is trying to trace the descendants of those people. If the families agree, the university will extract the DNA from a piece of that hair and begin to build a genetic map. This might help reconnect stolen generation families, it might repatriate unidentified remains from museums, and help to build genealogical history. Dr. Raymond Tobler from the university's Australian Centre for Ancient DNA told Vanessa Mills a little bit more about it.
Until 3 or 4 years ago, there hadn't really been a lot of genetic research with Aboriginal people, and that's a legacy of the past because of how things have been conducted here previously and the fact that Aboriginal people had not been treated particularly well, and there was no real effort to explain what the research was about and the benefits for Aboriginal people themselves. There's some potential positive stuff that Aboriginal people might be interested in, which is learning a little bit more about history, but there's other sides of it as well, which is sort of this broader sort of societal debate that we're having at the moment about what is ethnicity, you know, and is that related to genetics? Can you have a genetic test for Aboriginality, for instance? Things like that. That's all part of the same sort of discussion. And basically what we do is we go from community to community and we talk to people about the project, discuss with them what we're trying to do. But a big part of that is actually trying to find people because you've got these hair samples that are sitting at the museum. There's information about who provided the hair sample, and this is going back, you know, in some cases, nearly 100 years. And most of the time, that person who provided the hair sample is no longer alive. So what we need to do is find their living descendants. And the way the system works is we try to trace the oldest living descendant. So that could be, you know, children or grandchildren. And then we tell them about the project. And then they basically have time to think about whether they would like to be part of the project. And at which point we sort of come back and generally within 3 to 6 months after we first inform people about what we're trying to do and have a sit-down meeting with people. So there's no decision made at that point. So what our Aboriginal consultants at the moment are just basically trying to track people down and letting them know what we're up to. We'll go back and we'll actually have a formal meeting in 3 to 6 months where we will discuss with each of the people that turn up to the meeting what we're trying to do. So we'll have a general presentation, then we'll actually sit down with individual people and families to go through any questions that they might have about participation in the project.
And what is it like for relatives to learn that one of their ancestors has given a hair sample and here are these people all these years later coming back to tell them about it? What is that experience like?
Yeah, you can imagine in some cases it's pretty upsetting, especially because hair has a cultural significance to a lot of Aboriginal people. And the sad thing is that this collection at the museum was not widely advertised. So a lot of Aboriginal people don't know it's there. Some people remember the expeditions, but may not have been aware of the fact that an ancestor provided hair. So that can be pretty upsetting. And that's where sitting down with people and discussing the potential benefits that can come out of the research is important. But, you know, making it transparent and not trying to hide away from the history and things that have happened to bring us to this place, but, you know, reinforcing the possibilities that can still come, the benefits that can still come from actually working with the hair samples. And most of the people that we've spoken to so far in the project, we've had on the order of about 200 families that we've spoken to. Only two families have said no to participation. And in both cases, there were disputes within the family about whether or not they wanted to participate. Some individuals thought it would be good and some didn't think it would be so good. In all other cases, people have actually said yes. And I think that's because we've got a process where we can actually talk. People have got time to actually process what this is about. We try to answer any questions that they might have, and we try to be as upfront as possible about what you can actually gain. And that's a deeper understanding of the past and a deeper understanding of, you know, your own family history, but going right back to the very earliest stages of Aboriginal history. And in most cases, people think that that is useful enough to actually participate in the project.
And Dr. Tobler, how do you think that this reference database might be useful in the future when thinking about families who've been separated, when thinking about remains that are still overseas and unidentified in institutional archives, and just where we are as a society? How might this all play into those?
I think one of the enduring legacies of this type of work is that it makes possible things like repatriation, and also people, like when you think about the stolen generation in particular, where, and my own family has been impacted on my father's side by the stolen generation. A lot of people don't actually know where their ancestry comes from, like where their country is. So one of the things that is hopefully will be possible from work like this is developing a map of Australia, a historical genetic map, that basically shows where different Aboriginal groups were across Australia prior to Europeans arriving, because in different parts of Australia, that was really, people were moved around so much. A lot of the genetic sort of connections with particular places that are sort of emphasising, you know, this group was in this place at this time, has been really obscured by those movements. So what we're trying to do is reconstruct that picture prior to the arrival of Europeans. And I didn't mention this, but one of the advantages of working with the hair samples and why the hair samples are important, first of all, there's like 6,000 of them, and they were taken from right across Australia, collected from right across Australia. But they also, there was also a lot of cultural information that was collected, and including genealogical information, so family histories. And these sometimes go back 3 or 4 or 5 generations in some cases, so that we can actually locate, connect the genetics from the hair sample back to a place on the map in Australia that is reflective of where Aboriginal people were living prior to European colonisation. So that's really important, to try to build up a reference map that you could then use for repatriation. So that's sitting in museums, biological remains from Aboriginal people sitting in museums and institutes around the world. Some of that doesn't have any provenancing information. No one knows where it's from. It just ended up at the museum. Good records weren't, you know, well kept. And so this could be potentially returned to country in some cases. Stolen generation might be able to use that, the information from the genetic reference map, to understand more about where country is where their ancestors are from. At the moment, there's a lot of people using genetic services, commercial companies. Unfortunately, we can't do that for Australia until we have a good idea about where Aboriginal people were living prior to European arrival, because everything got mixed up. So this would be a step in that direction.
Dr. Raymond Tobler there from Adelaide's University's Australian Centre for Ancient DNA.